Standing Bear Story, Part 3. Warm country, the Poncas called it, Indian Territory, what would become Oklahoma, didn't sit well for the Poncas, didn't feel at all like home, and offered no rest for the weary, just another hardcore stretch of hunger and sickness. Weary and hungry when they arrived, they stayed weary and hungry for months. The government promised wagons but didn't distribute them, afraid the Poncas would sneak back home. The government provided plows but no oxen. The Poncas' horses were skin and bones. The people were living, just barely, in canvas tents, distanced from each other by an agent who thought keeping them apart would keep them from plotting some dark of night escape. Salty water all around pushed them to vomit. A year after their arrival, they'd all lost faith in the government and abandoned hope. I stayed till 158 of my people had died, Standing Bear explained later. Then I ran away with 30 of my people, men and women and children. Some of the children were orphans. Mid-afternoon, January 2, 1879, 30 Poncas and 3 wagons left amid mid-afternoon sub-zero temperatures that continued to fall every hour. Standing Bear had lost his firstborn, Bear Shield, a young man, his third child, to die since they'd been marched away from their homes and their land. Before he died, Bear Shield begged his father to bring his bones to the land of his grandfathers on the Niobrara. "I promised him I would," he told people. "I could not refuse the dying request of my boy." A trunk in one of those wagons that January afternoon held the remains of his son. The agent in warm country stayed holed up in the January cold while those 30 Poncas began the long trek home. 6 days passed before he knew they were gone. 6 days. The landscape from eastern Oklahoma through Kansas and Nebraska alters only slightly. Here and there, cottonwoods rise from the valleys of occasional rivers across the Poncas path, offering the only sustaining shelter from icy winds. What money they'd taken with them and the commodities they'd packed were quickly exhausted, forcing them to beg to stay alive. You may be surprised to learn that white homesteaders, most as poor Standing Bear's people, only rarely didn't or wouldn't feed them and find them shelter. On March 4, 62 days after they'd left Indian Territory, Suzette LaFleche, Bright Eyes, and her Omaha friends were told that the Poncas had arrived out west of the Omahas, where they were camped, regaining strength. The Omaha and Poncas were cousins. Between them, there was blood and a storehouse of goodwill. Planting season was about to begin, so the Omaha offered their relatives open land to grow crops, just as they had once done beside the Niobrara. But thousands of miles away, Washington would not tolerate the humiliation the Poncas had slapped on their great authority by defying its demands and administering the law, bringing them back once more to Indian country fell to Brigadier General George Crook, the premier Indian fighter. Crook's power had distinguished him in the Civil War as well as in Indian wars all over the West. At that moment, General Crook's residence was at Fort Omaha, where you can still visit his house today. General Crook had always been his own man, sometimes off for days, all by himself, while his troops were on whatever mission he'd appointed. But he's established a military record like none other, and Washington never doubted his allegiance or his valor. As commanded, General Crook and his troops traveled up from Fort Omaha to the Ponca encampment, west of the Omaha Reservation, and demanded Standing Bear's people return with him and his troops to the fort until ready to move once again back to warm country. Standing Bear and his people were physically worn and emotionally beaten by their long midwinter pilgrimage. The future looked bleak as the late winter countryside. No one. Not Crook, not Standing Bear, not the Omahas, not the settlers still moving into eastern Nebraska. No one would have or could have even begun to guess what would happen next.